Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, and welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast where we help families learn to love living with dogs. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here with Colleen Pilar. And this week, we're going to talk about vet visits and how to help your dog become more comfortable with the occasional vet visit, or maybe even the frequent one if your dog has recurring medical problems. But how do we help our dogs be more comfortable with a situation that can be scary and sometimes painful for them? So, Colleen, what do you have as your first suggestion for how to help your dog be comfortable at the vet's office?
Well, my very first suggestion is the basic idea of making the vet's office as fun as possible. It's tempting to think of it as a one-to-one ratio. Like, we had a good visit, and then we had a stressful visit, and so they cancel each other out. That's never, ever true. You need to have lots more good experiences than bad. So with a new dog, puppy or adult, it's always worth going to your vet and just sort of going in the waiting room, having a treat, and leaving.
Right.
Or having your dog get weighed, or bringing as many delicious, wonderful treats as you can to make the entire experience happy and fun. And most vet staff are very, very accommodating of this.
So
you can just sort of say, I'm just going to run in. We're going to be here for, you know, a minute and a half. Just want my dog to have a cookie appointment, which is what Kim Immel calls them, cookie appointments.
I love that.
I do too, because it's the idea is this is a fun moment for my dog. And the vets know that the more times your dog comes in and has a really good experience, the easier it will be on the day when they do have to do something a little bit more invasive or a little bit more frightening. So most vets' offices are really very accommodating with, you know, having these wonderful little cookie appointments where you just sort of run in, do something very short, very fun. And so the idea is not to stay for 20 minutes doing downstay in the lobby. That's not it. It should really be fast and fun and over.
Right.
How about you?
Well, I do that too. And one of the things that I also make sure that I do when I take a dog in to the vets is not only do I bring treats, but I tend to bring a really great treat because this is a highly stressful area. So this is not a time for milk bones. This is a better time for some boiled chicken or some string cheese or hot dogs or some really super valuable treat so that the stress of the vet's visit is countered by something really wonderful that I'm willing to focus on. But the other thing I will bring is toys.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I used to do with Bingley is he loved his cuzzes or his tennis balls. So I always bring a couple of those. And when we get put into the room, then he and I would play different games with his cuzzes. Like, I would put him in a sit stay so he's facing the door and I'd hide the cuzz behind me and he'd have to find it. Or, you know, I'd put him in a sit stay and tell him to, you know, leave it and then let him take it. And so we would play in the vet's office because he was much more of a play-motivated dog than a food-motivated dog, although he did like his chicken. But I thought that was important to know what my dog really loved and how can I incorporate that into the vet visit so that it became a place that was pretty comfortable for him. And it really did pay off. And the other thing I did, too, is I didn't just do it when he was a puppy. Up until the very end, I had balls and treats with me. So even at 10 years of age, I was still rewarding him for good vet visits. And as a result, when both he and Buckley had to go in for chemo treatments and stuff like that, I was told that I had very well-behaved dogs because they were comfortable with the whole atmosphere of a veterinary hospital because it usually meant treats and toys for them.
Yeah, it was a great way of channeling their energy. I did have one quick thought about the treats that you said bringing. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those cases where it depends.
You're right.
But I'm totally up for high-value treats. But some people have a special high-value, I'm going to the vet treat, like the only time you get roast beef is at the vet. And that can be great, or it can become a sign that I'm going to the vet. So roast beef could then become a taste aversion where you're like, oh, vet.
Oh, you're right.
So it's one of those cases where you want to know for your dog, you know, is it great to have something special and unique, or is it great to have something that you totally love in a variety of contexts? And either way, a very, very high value treat. But when you're thinking about the treats for the vet, be thinking about that. The idea of giving the dog the toys and the balls and the games that you find and all that, that's really about channeling the energy. It's really about giving the brain something to do. And when we're stressed, that's all we want is some outlet for that, where we're just sort of trapped and like, I'm stuck and I don't know what to do. So, oh, find my cuz. Oh, okay, I can do that. And that's very relieving. It's a wonderful activity. I had posted on Facebook just asking some other trainers to see if they had any other suggestions for vet visits. And I did love that Dawn Elberson-Goring was talking about the treat dispensing toys too. But she gives a particular warning of that you should bring quiet toys because she had a really noisy hard ball in the exam room once. And she said she's pretty sure the folks in the other exam room thought that her dog was breaking out, like, while, you know, going through a kibble nibble or some other hard plastic toy. So I thought that was kind of a funny tip. But yeah, having something that your dog can do can be really, really valuable for giving that energy and anxiety a direction.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the other things I was thinking when you mentioned that you need to be careful about not pairing it simply with something uncomfortable is that the other thing is knowing what your dog loves, to be able to bring a variety of things from toys to food, because there are times, like if I had to take Bingley in for an x-ray, he could not eat anything. Mm-hmm. So that I had to have a way to keep him happy at the vet's office without food. So I think it's important to think about, why is the dog going to the vet? If this is just a routine visit, you know, to do a, you know, a stool sample, maybe get a, you know, vaccine boost, or you know, just your animal physical, then probably bringing food and toys are not a big deal. But if you're going in for a very specific thing, you need to figure out, is there a way to keep my dog happy so he can get the medical treatment he needs and not interrupt that? So if he needs an x-ray, you can't really use food. So that's something to think about too, is that perhaps during these regular vet visits, figure out lots of different ways that you can keep your dog focused and entertained. Mm-hmm. Which I think, didn't you say there was another post about something about leave it?
Yeah, the most brilliant suggestion I'd ever heard, which makes me sad that I never thought of it on my own, but you know, Terry is much brighter than I. Terry Mallett said she trained her dog a stellar leave it. And the idea being that you can put your dog either on the floor or on the table and put a treat down and tell the dog to leave it, and the dog will be so focused staring at that treat that some other handling can be done. She said her pug, the vet was able to take her pug's temperature, and the dog never moved because the dog was going like, is it now? Is it now? Is it now? Is it now? Yay, now I get to have the treat. And I thought that was a really smart thing, because leave it is something that most dogs are very focused and excited about. And so you could do some very simple handling of a dog or examination. You might be able to palpate a bump or something while a dog was doing a leave it without being much of a challenge. So I thought that was really smart. The other skill that Terry suggested is teaching your dog to play dead. Mm-hmm. And then with every skill, you're teaching these skills at home.
Right.
And then when they're good, we're using them at the vet. So it's not like we start teaching the dog at the vet these skills. But so the doing play dead, and then at home, just grab whatever object is nearby that's a little odd and touch your dog in various spots on the body with it. So, you know, you have a can opener and you run along the dog's side, or you touch paws with it, or an ice cube tray that goes along the dog's tail, or some such thing. What we're looking at is veterinary equipment can be weird.
It can be very
weird. And so if we can just sort of have the dog go, oh, yay, I just lay here and she touches me with stuff, that's no big deal. So whatever's on your desk, just look around, grab something.
Stapler.
And stapler, indeed, and it's perfect.
Right.
So I thought that was a really bright idea. And so that's kind of, when we look at what are the skills a dog needs at a vet, in terms of training, the leave it and the play dead and a good stand stay kind of thing can all be very valuable skills.
Right. I was going to say, I'm glad you mentioned stand stay, because that's what my breeder teaches all of her puppies, is a stand stay for the vet. And so she starts very early. So by the time you get the dog at 8 or 9 weeks of age, it understands standing at the vet. And that can be really handy. And, you know, I had to take Zuzu into the vet, and she leaped onto the table. It was one of those lifting tables. So she leaped mm-hmm. onto it and stood. And I'm like, didn't actually teach that, but okay, yay. Of course, she also leaped off of it, which we didn't really want. But, you know, nonetheless, we're working in that direction. So I think those are all really terrific ideas.
Yeah, those are all really the good things for your average dog in your average situation. You know, like every dog has to go to the vet and get checkups. So those help for those dogs. But for some dogs, they have a little bit more vet anxiety for whatever reason.
Right.
And so then we would like to look at, you know, what are some strategies to help those dogs, the dogs who might have a little bit more need for support. And one of the very best things that you can do is avoid the waiting room. So yes, the waiting time, it can be really difficult. So you have a couple of options there. Most vets are very accommodating with these. You can leave your dog in the car, run in and say, "Hi, I'm here. I'm in my car. So call me when you're ready." And, you know, they will call or text you as soon as an exam room is ready. Or you can have added to your chart that when you arrive, you're taken right into an exam room, and that many vets will plan their schedule accordingly so that they know a room is open before your appointment, so that when you arrive, they can get you right in. And frequently, vets have a side door or a back door right, that you can come in, so that your dog does not have to run the gauntlet in the lobby past all the other dogs who are there too. So I've had a few clients tell me, well, that seemed bad. Like it's almost a judgment of their dog if they come in the side door and go to the exam room. I'm like, oh, it's a gift. It's a gift. It's a gift you're giving your dog, and it's a gift the vet's office is giving you, because we're just helping your dog to be as unstressed as possible, which is not unstressed. Right. It's just we're not adding on top the running the gauntlet of the lobby. So if we can just take out some of the human emotion on that, nobody's judging you if you ask for some special support for your dog. In fact, the vets are fully in favor of doing everything they can to help a dog feel more comfortable coming in, because they need to touch your dog.
Right. And they also understand that behavior deteriorates under stress. So
right,
why this might be a perfectly lovely dog if we meet in the parking lot. If I'm under stress, mm-hmm, then you touched my sore hip and I might have to tell you to stop.
Right.
So
setting your dog up for success, whatever that means, can be really valuable. And talking about it with your vet and the office staff, because all of the people there have strategies and tips that they've used with other animals that could be very helpful to you.
Absolutely. One of the other things that I like to do is use DAP, which is dog appeasing pheromone. Mm-hmm. And it was a pheromone that was isolated by a French scientist from a lactating female. So it's the pheromone that puppies get a hold of when they are about to nurse. And so it can be very comforting for dogs. And it can come as a spray that you can spritz on a bandana and put on the dog, and so that they smell that. And if you put it on before you head to the vets, it lasts for about 45 minutes to an hour on the bandana. And that can be very comforting to a dog, mm-hmm, as well. One of the other strategies, however, if you have to go to someplace like MedVet here in Columbus, very large facility, has a very large waiting room, and as does the OSU Veterinary Hospital, lots of dogs, and there's not enough rooms to accommodate people. So one of the things that I have done is with treats is whenever another dog barks or makes a noise anywhere in the clinic that my dog can hear, my dog gets a treat. And it does, mm-hmm, a couple of things for my dog. I remember doing this with Buckley. A dog barked, and Buck sat up straight, and I said, "Oh, Bucky here," and he got a treat. It got him to refocus on me and off of the barking dog. Dogs find treat taking very comforting, so I fed him a few treats. And then the other thing it does is if the other dog is near you, if nobody's joining in the bark fest, then he's less likely to bark.
Right.
And it's very hard to bark if you have a treat in your mouth. I mean, some dogs can do it, but it's really kind of hard to do. So it prevents your dog from barking, gets him to refocus and relax on you, and perhaps calm the other dog by not having your dog join into the bark fest. And I found that to be very handy to help my dog reduce his stress.
It's a nice way of creating a positive association with a stress-related noise. In our reactive dog class, we do that. Anybody barks, everybody gets a treat. Yay! Because the fact is, the barking is occurring because of some stress. You know, we're not denying their stress, but we're just going like, you are okay. You know,
right,
you are just fine in this moment. So good things happen to dogs who are around barking dogs.
There are some dogs, though, that in order to help them be successful, and so that you can minimize the amount of time you're in the vet's office and maximize the vet's ability to handle your dog, is that the use of a basket muzzle can be very handy with, mm-hmm, dogs who tend to be reactive. And they're not that hard to condition a dog to accept. If you use a basket muzzle, one, they come in lots of bright colors, so you can get a really cute looking one so it doesn't look like your dog is some sort of fierce beast. You can have pretty pink or happy orange. And a basket muzzle allows your dog to breathe and to pant. You can also maybe stick a little pretzel through it so they can get a bit of a treat. So a muzzle is a tremendous training aid and another way to help to make this vet visit go much more smoothly.
And again, something that you'd be training at home and using at home. It doesn't, you know, putting the muzzle on does not necessarily mean vet.
Right.
Putting the muzzle on means treat. Sometimes it means treat at home. Sometimes it means treat in the front yard. Sometimes it means treat in the car. Sometimes it means treat at the vet. But muzzle is not, oh dear, something stressful is going to occur. Muzzle is yay. So if we can create these associations, that will help a lot if you have a dog who will be very uncomfortable at the vet. It makes it safer for everyone. It makes it safer for your dog and for the vet.
Okay, so a muzzle can help a dog who may be reactive. But what about somebody who's just anxious?
Well, one other tip that can be helpful for a dog that's just anxious is bringing that dog along on your other pet's visits. So if you need to take your cat or other dog to the vet, this is for a worried but not reactive dog, because you obviously need to be paying attention to the animal whose appointment it is. But if you can have, you know, if Zuzu can come along when Edzo goes to the vet and Zuzu just gets treats, then that increases the number of positive experiences that she has at the vet before it's her turn to be examined or have anything a little bit more stressful.
That's just a great idea.
One other tip. Not necessarily for the dog who's really worried about the vet, because that's a much more challenging situation, but for the one that's a little bit suppressed or anxious or shut down, it can be a nice way to help them loosen up a bit. With those toys and treats and all the other fun things.
That's right. And I think it's a great idea. And I think it also brings us back to that same point that it can't just be a direct one-to-one ratio. I mean, you really, I don't know what the ratio is, but I know it's pretty high. I think about
it's very high.
My daughter, Emma, when she was about eight or nine, somewhere in there, we went to visit some friends and their little dog was on a chair and Emma went to pet it and the dog rolled around and bit her and just raked right down her finger. And it was we didn't think it was that serious of a bite. We kept a close eye on it. But even though we changed the bandage and cleaned it several times that day, by the end of the night, her finger was twice its normal size and it was a terrible infection. And we had something like 7 vet visits in order to treat this infection and make sure it didn't get driven into her hand.
I'm betting they were pediatrician visits.
Did I say veterinarian visits?
You did. You said 7 vet visits to treat your daughter's finger.
Well, since most of the time she thought she was a dog, maybe it was a vet visit, but I'm going to go with you. I think you're right. I think it was probably the pediatrician. I think I even drew the line at saying, no, you cannot be treated by the vet. As much as she would have preferred that. But you're right. It was a pediatrician visit. So somebody asked me at the end of this whole ordeal, well, gosh, does Emma still like dogs? I mean, is she afraid of dogs now? And that was a stunning question to me, because if anybody knew Emma, as I mentioned, she used to like to pretend she was a dog for the first 8 years of her life, and she had a great deal of positive experiences with our dogs and with other dogs as well. So that when this happened with Abby, when she was bitten, it was a blip. It wasn't a traumatic event for her,
right,
because she had this huge wellspring of positive opportunities and positive experiences with the dog. Did she learn something from it? She sure did. She learned not to pet a dog who wasn't facing her, you know, and not to approach a dog on a chair, but say their name and so on and so forth. But it did not do anything to diminish her love of dogs. And I think that was really because she had this huge backlog of experiences that were positive with dogs. So that really pointed out to me that it has to be a great big ratio of positive to one negative.
Right.
Because that one negative can have real serious ramifications if there's nothing to buffer it.
Mm-hmm. And that's true for all of us. I mean, if you just think about it, somebody says something really rude or hurts your feelings, and then they go, but you're also really a nice person. Yeah, it hasn't changed your emotional state yet.
No.
You're still like, yeah, I'm still mad at you. So that one-to-one ratio is not enough. So we do need to have the positives have to outweigh the negatives by a significant amount, because our brains really are wired to pay attention to the negatives.
Correct.
And that's a great evolutionary trait, but it doesn't always help us with things like vet visits.
No, it doesn't always help us with bed visits. So is there anything else, any other suggestions that you had or anything else you want to add into this conversation about vet visits that might be of use?
No, I think the real key is, you know, when you first get a dog is to just try to set up as many positive ones as possible and then to continue doing that from time to time throughout the right. dog's life. But then also to look at what are the strategies with whatever your dog finds challenging. So if your dog finds the waiting challenging, then maybe it's toys or maybe it's not being in the waiting room. You know, everybody has our own issues. What helps your dog?
Right. And I also think, too, you can, and I like the suggestion of touching your dog with a variety of things when they're mm-hmm. when they're calm. One of the things we do in puppy class is we set up a vet table and we put the dog on the table. And then we do things like we lift his ears. We don't actually put anything in it, but we get close as if we're examining. We lift their lips. We will pet the dog all over, up and down his legs and on his belly. And we lift the tail in anticipation of a rectal exam or taking the temperature, that kind of thing. So the dog gets used to being handled in a wide variety of ways. One of the reasons why we really want our dogs to be comfortable at the vet is because of those emergency situations as well. So mm-hmm. that if we have to take our dog in because we punctured our paw or we strained our shoulder, we're not going to add to the stress of the injury or the illness by taking him to a place that sends them over the edge.
Right. So I think those are kind of the basics of it.
I do too. So I will see you next week, Colleen, and thanks for joining us at Your Family Dog.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend about it. We'd love to reach people who feel as we do, that life is better with a dog.